Shall I start like right at the like my first day of my first encounter at Hunter College?
Hold on a second. George Hoffman doing a oral history tape here for the oral history project of Hunter College Art Department. Talking here with Carol Kinney on November 8th. 2001 in her office at Colgate University in Hamilton, New York. Okay. Actually, you know, Carol, if I may say right away, if you could just say a word or two about your earliest beginning so we know a little bit about, you know, where you were born and a little bit about education and so forth, that would be...
Okay, well, I came to Hunter kind of in the middle of my sophomore year as a transfer from Syracuse and Buffalo. I tried the upstate thing and did not like it at all.
Now, were you
I
an
had
upstate
come from, no, I had actually, I was from, I had graduated from high school in Bronxville, New York, in Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
However,
and
I had been born, I was born in Utica, New York, through no fault of my own. But it was a war, you know, and you got born where you could. My father's family was from the Utica area. My mother's family was from Watertown, but her at a certain point in her life, she had moved to Westchester, and that was sort of where all her friends were. So when my parents broke up, she went back to, we returned to Westchester, and that's where I, from about sixth grade on, that's where I lived. And then when it came time to go to college, I didn't have any money, so the counselors or whatever at Bronxville said, well, go to Syracuse. It's a big place. You can probably earn some money there.
Syracuse
University?
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was just, I went to a small high school, so I wanted to go to a kind of a more, a larger university where there'd be a more diverse student body and all of that. But Syracuse was not the place.
It was not
and
for you?
No, and Buffalo wasn't the place either. They
was
were both
Syracuse
kind of,
just too big? Or?
It was more of a party school.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So the both places just, I had such a good education at in high school that neither of them really lived up to my expectations. And I was really into getting an education. I really loved
well, this is a
school.
Common problem, I think, with well-prepared high school students.
Yeah.
College is a bust.
It was like a yawner, so
yeah.
I missed the city. So I came back to the city in December, right after the first term of my sophomore year.
Meeting New York City.
Yeah, and you know, lived with my mother in Bronxville and worked for the New York Public Library full-time until I could get into Hunter and so forth. Decided that I wanted to go to Hunter. I didn't know that much about it. I didn't know anything about the art department, but I knew that it was a good college. Hunter was kind of considered the working class girls Barnard at that time.
And well, yes, and that
and
was,
I loved, I really wanted to go to Barnard.
This was, oh, did you really? And
I loved
and this
the,
was in 62. Okay, right.
So I decided to give Hunter College a try. So I applied, and I was very proud of the fact that I was accepted because it was a very, you know, it wasn't an easy school to get into. And they
yes.
took the cream of the crop.
This was before open admissions and so forth.
Yeah, way before that. And mm-hmm. it was also still mm-hmm. an all-woman
so
college.
You entered as an undergraduate.
Yeah.
Maybe in your sophomore year or
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Yeah, so the following, I guess I went to summer school. I was accepted. I went to summer school. I took, I had a couple, you know, to start getting some of my requirements out of the way, and I continued. Actually, the whole time I was at Hunter, I worked as an undergraduate. I worked at the New York Public Library. That was the job I had.
So. And were you then majoring in art already?
Yeah, I decided at that point. By the time I'd gotten through Syracuse and Buffalo, the one decision I had made was that I was going to be an artist. I'd gone off to college to be a. I thought I was going to be a mathematician. Then I sort of moved through philosophy and a few other ideas, and then I sort of settled on. I'd never taken very much art in high school. I hadn't even considered it as anything, but I just decided to be an artist. I guess I had a lot of artists who were living in my house at Syracuse, and they used to have all these interesting problems to solve, and they were kind of stupid, and they never could, you know, so I would solve, they would bring me their art problems, and I would solve their art problems for them.
Like backdoor entrance,
you know,
to...
This is like the first real challenge. This is challenging.
Yes,
this is interesting.
Yes.
This is something I want to do, and I knew that I didn't want to go to just an art school. I really wanted more of my education than just, you know, just like a trade school kind of thing. And Syracuse University had, of course, a big art school, but
yeah,
it didn't really appeal to me. That I went to talk to the guy who was the head of the department, and he seemed very proud of the fact that his students had the lowest SAT scores. So I thought, crap, I don't want to be one of them.
Oh my God, the reverse snobbery of the art world.
And then I went, then I go back to New York and I'm looking at some of the, so I looked at it. I guess I looked at the School of Visual Arts. And I went in there and there's this guy who was, three sheets to the wind, and he's telling me how artists suffer. And so I was thinking, hey, I don't want to suffer either. So that's how I got to Hunter.
Wow, what an intro.
Of course, when I told my uncle I was going to Hunter, he said, oh, it's communists. Place is full of communists. And that made it even more interesting. So I was like psyched.
Full of communists. Actually, it was the most sedate place where Irish Catholic girls came from the Bronx.
German Catholic and Irish Catholic girls.
Went to become teachers full of communists. Right. Oh, what a riot.
be an art major, I thought it said something about a portfolio. So, and I had no interest in the teaching program. I wanted to go into the BFA program. I knew that that's what I wanted. And so there was something about a portfolio. So I made an appointment, and I very nervous, and I got all dressed up, and I took a day off from work, and I had all the stuff that I'd done from art school and up in Buffalo, and went there, and it was one of the twins, Mrs. Miller, Professor Miller.
Margaretha Miller.
And she said, do you want to go into the teaching program? And I said, no, I'm applying for the BFA program. And she said, oh, okay, you're in.
Never
looked at my portfolio or anything. It was like, you're crap.
Oh, she was only interested in the teachers.
Exactly. So, okay, so I was in. And of course, you had to apply to the BFA program, again, once you were a matriculated student and stuff, and get into that. I think you got into it, in your junior year or something like that. So
who were your very first art teachers?
I believe it was Richard Zeman.
Oh, my God, Dick Zeman.
And Ron Gorchoff. So I might have had Ron the second term. I know
Ron was your teacher.
One of my friends, and it was like his first teaching.
I can't believe it.
And I think I had Dick for drawing one, and Ron for drawing two. So I must have had Dick first and then Ron. And I had, Hunter had thousands of required courses that you had to take. So I had to kind of work that out as a transfer student and take the things that I had to take. So I think I just had, I think I might have started just with drawing, and then I took more stuff.
Any
second
art
term.
History in there?
Not at the beginning that I remember.
Leo Steinberg.
Oh, I had those guys a little bit later, but my very first contact was Dick Zeman, and I remember he.
A wonderful printmaker.
Yeah, he was,
A sweet guy.
Sweet guy, and he just had this bunch of junk, and I don't remember there was no syllabus or program or anything that we followed. We would just go up there and get the stuff and draw it, and I loved to draw, so I.
Yeah. But he himself, I think, was very disciplined.
He was, but was not a very, the class was, people worked diligently, mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. But I was pretty much working on my own and doing
these
drawings.
He had that kind of quiet way about
it. Exactly. And then at the end, he said, Carol, I would like to take blah, 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 drawings. And I remember being amazed that he knows who I am.
Wow, yeah.
So he gave me a little bit of, he gave me some recognition. So I began to get a little bit, a little bit more confidence in myself. Then I met Ron Gorchoff, who was teaching, and I remember Ron, the first day of class, he went through this most painful kind of discussion of the importance of drawing ellipses.
Ellipses?
Which he pronounced ellipse, I think. And I remember him drawing it on the blackboard, and I remember talking about ellipses. And I have to this day the most incredible respect for ellipses, probably more than anyone should have.
Due to him.
Due to Ron Gorchoff. And then I, at some point there, I took a painting. I had painting, and then I had, which is where I met Ray Parker.
And Ray was your first painting.
Right, and then I began to get to know. I began to kind of get involved with the community of art students that was there. And so when you went into Ray's class, what would happen is Arthur Elgar would teach you. Ray did a kind of funny demonstration of how to stretch a canvas, which I remember the main phrase was chase the wrinkle.
Very good.
And so I, you know, chased the wrinkle, and I managed to get my first canvas together. But then Arthur Elgar, it seemed to me, was sort of he was like a little older than I was, and he...
Was he the assistant, or he was...
No, he was a student. He was like a senior, and I was a, you know, second semester. Uh-huh. I was like a sophomore, junior kind of thing. Uh-huh. So Arthur would take you over then, and he would tell you, you know, Arthur showed me how to gesso a canvas, and also how to get cheap paint, and, you know, he told me where to get all my supplies. And so he filled me in on how to be an art student, because I hadn't taken all that many art courses, you know, up to that time, so I didn't know exactly how to be a student.
And Arthur became a big graphic designer.
Yeah,
didn't he?
Well, he's a
photographer.
Yeah, he's
that's
very
right.
Well,
that's
yeah, he's
right.
Got a big, has a big book of
yes.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he, Arthur did good. But he was, and then that's when I met Warren Tanner, and of course Warren and I became the best of buds, and then I also met Nancy Watt and Linda Francis and the rest of the crew, and so we. Arthur Ginsburg, who's now a filmmaker, I think. And then Linda Francis and Pat Gorman, who were actually in the class before me.
Wow,
so we formed
of names I haven't heard in a long time.
So we formed a very tight group, and because we were sort of the core and the only ones that weren't in part of the teaching program. We were all BFAers. And so we had at our disposal, our personal disposal, Tony Smith and Ray Parker and all these guys who were just delighted to have any students who, you know, gave a rat's, you know, what about art.
And
and weren't just, you know, in this kind of careerist
right.
things. You know, so we'd go to their openings on Tuesday night. And, it was a fabulous experience, which I really had just kind of stumbled into. I had no idea what Hunter's art department was like when I went into it. I knew that it was a good school. I hoped their art department was decent. I applied, and then I just found myself bang in this great community.
So Tony was already there.
Right. Tony had just come.
Or had just come.
Tony was on his way, I think during my junior year.
That's 63 or 64.
He had substituted for, Ray got sick or had to go away for a while, or for some reason Ray was off the scene for a while, and Tony substituted for his painting class. And I was in there, I remember I was in there painting away, and suddenly this face pops around the canvas, this, you know, great bearded face with these intense blue eyes just about piercing through me, and I remember I was drawing my paintbrush across, and I had stopped just in the nick of time, or I would have painted his face, and he, you know, startled the heck out of me, and...
And he said
something like, "Oh, you're pretty keen. You're what an interesting painting," or whatever. You know, he also gave me encouragement. So these guys were very encouraging.
And do you think it was Ray who had drawn him in, or
no? It was Gene.
Gene Goosen was already there.
Yeah, Gene was already
as chair.
Gene was chair when I came.
He had just
started together, I think, in '62.
Right. So, yes, of course, it was Gene.
And I hadn't really met him yet either. I didn't know him.
Lured.
Right. And then
Tony
I had,
yeah.
I'm trying to remember art history. I remember Janet Rerick for Impression. I had Janet for Impressionism, Post-Impressionism.
You know, that's very interesting because really she's a Renaissance
scholar. Yeah, but she taught the
scholar.
And she was a little strange and uptight and stuff.
Yeah.
And whatever. But her class really, it was the first time I experienced art history as a scholarly pursuit. Prior to that, it had been pretty much memorize the slides, two slides would go up, compare, contrast. You know, so art history hadn't up until that point really interested me too much. It was a place where I really fought to stay awake when the lights went down to show the slides, you know. So Janet. And we read all these interesting original sources about, you know, actual critics of the period and not just textbooks that reported on them.
How interesting.
And then for the final test, we got to make up the test. We posed the questions and answered. I think we had like a slide review or something, and we had to get the dates right and stuff like that. But the essay part
was
we posed a question and then answered it. I never thought I would get an A in an art history class,
yeah.
But I did. You know, I did very well in that class.
I've never noticed about her.
It was a total turn on.
Yeah.
And so after that, I was very, you know, and that was kind of the level I really demanded of my art history classes after that.
Yeah.
And if I didn't get it, I was very disappointed.
Yeah.
And I think I had Steinberg and Rubin, like at the end of my undergraduate career. I had, because I was a January graduate, and the last term, I had 5 credits that I had to do. I had to do the second half of my BFA program that fall, and I had nothing else, you know, that I needed to take, and so that I could put together a full program. So I actually took graduate courses as an undergraduate because they were cheaper.
Oh my God!
So
and you technically could do that.
Yeah. And I think that's where I got Rubin and Steinberg, and there was some cool guy, I think it was a city planner or something, who I took also. And then I stayed the term after I graduated for another term, and had Tony Smith's design class, and maybe that's when I had the city planner guy. I took a few more graduate courses, and then I went up to Bennington, but I had to, you know, I had to sort of kill a year before I could get up there. The first half of my senior year, which was actually the spring of 64, I guess Tony and Jean had arranged some deal where they were going to get some poor girl off the streets of New York and send her up to Bennington for the Bennington experience. And they thought, Carol Kinney, she'd be perfect for this. And so that's when I first met Jean, was, you know, as he introduced me to Bennington and everything. And I went up there and I was interviewed.
And did they say to you, here's $20,000, go
well,
and
they
do
paid.
This?
Well, they paid. They actually paid. That Bennington gave me full tuition.
How wonderful.
And I think Jean even gave me $100. Jean gave me something out of his pocket. Said, here.
I love it.
I don't want you to have to work. You know, you've worked 2 or 3 jobs your whole college career. I don't want you to have to work. Go to Bennington. So I went up to Bennington. And of course, they got back to Jean. They were very disappointed that it was me. Because I wasn't, you know, they had this vision of this poor black girl or something. And here I was, you know, ancestor of Ethan Allen, back up at Bennington. I think somebody off the streets of New York literally would have freaked at Bennington. I think I was probably
thrown
a fairly
themselves
de-
off of
exactly.
whatever, yeah.
I think
yeah.
I was a fairly decent choice.
I'm so accustomed to the idea of the migration from Bennington to Hunter,
yes,
that it's remarkable to talk to somebody who actually went the other way. It's like going the wrong way up a one-way
street. That was kind of, sort of was the wrong way, but...
Yes, but it was Jean and Tony's idea.
To send me up there.
For you
so that's how I, then
that.
I met Paul Feeley while I was there as an undergraduate.
Of course, yeah.
And you know, Feeley was my guy. He was just such a cool guy.
And that maybe was 65.
Right, so I went back to study mainly because of Feeley. I went back to do my graduate work at Bennington mainly because of Feeley. And then, of course, he died, you know, about a term after I was there. So I had to just kind of make do with whatever I could. I kind of made up my own program for the rest of the time to complete it.
And
there.
Then
I came back to Hunter to teach.
Well, and who besides Paul did you encounter?
Vinny Longo. Vinny was there. Yeah. Vinny and I came back to Hunter at the same time.
That was about 66 or so, I think.
Yeah, I started teaching in 67, and I think Vinny did too.
Yeah.
I think he might have done a class or something.
He did a class, I think, and then finally moved
67, he was
entirely over.
Yeah, so we both moved together.
Yeah. So you were at Bennington maybe a year, tops.
I was at Bennington actually 2.5 years, because I was there the half year as
an
undergraduate.
Long.
And then I went, and then I had to do the 2-year program.
Oh, you actually did your graduate...
Yeah, so I got my master's degree at Bennington.
At Bennington.
Right.
You really did do the reverse. Completely.
Right.
Wow. Because so many others...
It was more a matter of, it was easier to live there. Having no money and, you know, being in the city and having to, you know, or kind of my best option.
Scramble.
I was mainly commuting from my mother's house, and mm-hmm. I was so burned out on that stupid train ride,
mm-hmm.
and working, you know, 300 jobs at Bennington. I could, you know, I worked in the factory, I did babysitting, I could make do there. It was just easier to live.
And
I was on scholarships.
Very taxing for 100 students. Everyone underestimates the toll.
I might have done better if I'd stayed at Hunter, because I had been accepted into the graduate program, but I needed a break from the city stuff. I needed a break from that kind of grind, because I used to work 2 and 3 jobs. I carried, you know, like a 18, I always carried over the minimum so I could make up for transferring.
Yeah.
I was fried.
Yeah.
You know,
that was
I slept like, you know, 5 hours a night maybe. I was just, you know, skinny as a rail. I was fried.
Yeah.
My eyes were like this all the time.
So. And. Of colleagues at Bennington, other people in the program, do you remember who was there?
That's where I met Susan.
Oh, my ex-wife.
Yes. Because I lived in Wells.
Although she, I think, was an undergraduate.
No, I met her as an undergraduate.
Yes.
The term that I was there.
Right.
Because Susan's class was, you know, about ready to graduate, so I became part of that group.
Mm-hmm.
And so Susan and I can't remember, but we lived, you know, I lived in Wells Cottage or whatever. And Susan was a lot of fun, I remember. And she was.
And was there general, why, was it because of Tony and Vinny and Gene that people thought, oh, Hunter is the natural place to go? Was it these personalities that drew people?
I think they had a tie that was very strong.
Yeah.
You know, while Vinny was still at Bennington and the other guys sort of slowly but surely, I think Kip came from Bennington.
Correct.
Also.
He was up there. I forgot about him.
Right. Oh, so right. Yeah. So while I was at Bennington, I met Tony Carroll.
Of course.
And I worked with him.
That was maybe the first year. Well, that was the year he was there.
Yeah, that was the year he was there.
Yeah,
and so through Tony, then I got to meet Ken Noland.
Yes,
and,
of course.
You know, and.
And Olitsky was up there.
Olitsky, of course, was on the faculty, and I got to meet Ken and Greenberg.
That's right.
Because of that, and I remember I had done very well on a plaster project, so when Tony Carroll broke his arm or leg or whatever it is, he had done something to his. He was in a car, you know.
I remember.
He was a crazy driver, and he was always on the wrong side of the road. He always drove down the left side of the road.
And why? Because he was British.
Because he was British. But he had had a car accident and broken his leg and had his leg in a cast, and something happened to the cast and he needed a repair. So I'd been there about 2 weeks. Hello, Tony Carroll here. Hey, Carol, I've noticed you're quite keen in plaster, in your plaster project. I have a little favor to ask of you.
You mean you didn't go to a goddamn doctor?
No. And so we met in the sculpture studio, and I put his cast back together.
Unbelievable.
You know, it was another sculpture project or something. And so, it was so nice not to have to work.
Yeah.
And that I was creating like a major painting a week and a major sculpture, and I was just, you know, it was just very prolific up there. And so Carol really liked the fact that I was pretty energetic, and somehow through his connection, I ended up taking pictures for Tony, for Noland, of, I guess, Carol's sculpture at Noland's house or something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I had my first professional, you know, bought my slide from that. They paid me $50, and I took slides of Carol's stuff up there, you know. So it's kind of through my experiences at Hunter and my experiences there, I'd really, you know, I'd suddenly become sucked into this kind of the whole art world was, you know,
which was fabulous of art this time,
and I had just stumbled onto it, you know.
Yeah.
I just happened to make a few choices completely blind.
Yeah.
That turned out very nicely.
And for you, as a student, what was the emotional thing? Was it like, oh my God, these people are all so great, or
no? Because I don't.
Was it like I'm learning a lot? I love.
Yeah.
I like. What was the I mean, for me, I was a little bit out of that scene.
Yeah.
So for me, it was all kind of personal and art, but not academic. It wasn't learning directly from any of them. You know,
yeah.
I was like a little acolyte or something. Mm-hmm. You know.
It was very nice to be with, first of all, students who were that level of seriousness that crowd was.
Yes.
And to be encouraged to that extent by these people was also a very special experience, I think.
It's got to have been the best.
I think I probably had the best education that any artist could possibly have had.
I guess I feel that way too.
And
yeah.
Since I, you know, also kind of, I ended up teaching, becoming a teaching artist as well, I think that my my kind of slow and stumbling ability to do that really came out of there. You know, I mean, somebody like Tony Smith was very involved in education and the importance of the education of the artist.
Yes.
And Vinnie also, especially those two guys, were very influential, and Gene, of course, too, were very influential, I think, in that way, in my sort of appreciation of or allowing me to be my own teacher too, to in sense of a kind of confidence or respect about how, you know, so they taught me how to learn, and they
That's
made
a remarkable
me love
thing to say.
They made me love that process. I just loved that process, and it was those guys. I mean, that's what I wanted when I went off to college, and I didn't find it in those other places. I wasn't just kind of a footloose person or something. I just didn't find it there. And you know, Syracuse and Buffalo were like, nobody did that there.
So
these guys,
part of what you're saying is the respect that they had for the learning process. That is so interesting. I've never thought of that before.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah.
I think that's that is kind of a Bennington thing, that sort of self-consciousness about education and stuff.
Right.
And but some, you know, which is sometimes gets a little sticky at Bennington, but this was sort of maybe a better place to put it or something, that it worked very well in the city, in the context of the city. And it was fabulous.
And this thing that you're describing of the seriousness of the other students, and then disrespect from the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful world!
And we were artists. We weren't students. We were artists.
Yeah.
You know, that was the kind of thing. We happened to be undergraduates, you know, working for grades and credit hours or whatever. But we were artists. We were, you know, Warren Tanner and I and Nancy and all of those people were committed to being artists.
Well, and of course, when it isn't just a loose thing to say that Bennington functioned in this way, because of course, even technically, they had no grades.
Mm-hmm.
The comments were written, so instructors had to really think about each person as an entity, which didn't happen any person.
Right.
A, B, C minus, who, you know.
Yeah, who gives a crap?
Right. It engendered a whole different. Sure. Yeah.
But even those guys who weren't, you know, like Dick Zeman, say, who wasn't part of that crowd, his care for what he did, you just couldn't leave home without it. You know what I mean?
Yes,
you couldn't.
Yes.
It just
and
couldn't
it
be
showed
ignored.
In his work,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was his incredible meticulousness and
seriousness.
You know. Yeah. So what I really learned from these people was how to be an artist.
Yes.
You know, which is what you. It's not that I learned, you know, the put red and blue together or this or that. I could have figured that out on my own probably, but I learned kind of what, you know, what being an artist meant.
Mm-hmm.
And right from the get-go, as soon as, you know, I stepped foot in that place, I knew I was somewhere. The rest of Hunter was, you know, had its ups and downs.
The other departments.
Right, and I was pretty lonely, you know, for maybe my first 6 months there, because I hadn't really connected with this group yet, but as soon as you know, when Arthur Elgar took me under his wing, show me
stretch
a candle, chase the wrinkle, and you know, and to use Benjamin Moore pigment and oils, which never dried. I still have a painting that Bob hung in one of the rooms. It's still not dry.
25 years later, 30 years later.
1966 is just not dry.
So that's an extremely interesting tale. And then you return to Hunter,
mm-hmm.
and as a teacher. Yeah, yeah. So what was your first, were you teaching drawing or
I taught drawing and whatever it was called, visual studies.
No, oh,
it was
yes, called the something, intro yeah, course.
Which was not visual studies quite yet, because I was part of that curriculum committee that created that course, actually.
We're three instructors.
Yeah, but we still had the three instructors. It was just called something else, but I can't remember it.
And
then I taught drawing. And I taught in the Bronx.
Ah, yes. Yes, as did we all, my God. Which was in itself hilarious when you think about it, because it was like a separate bailiwick of
Tony Smith said to me, "The Bronx, no thunks." And off I went.
We all made that
yeah,
trek.
We all had,
it was
yeah,
unbelievable.
That was part of your breaking in period, I guess.
Yeah.
But I also, as a, you know, still as a BFA student, I worked in PS 76.
Yes.
I was among the group that, you know, sort of fashioned the first studios out of that.
The building catacorner to
yeah.
the old mm-hmm. high school building on... Right. on
and I guess there was printmaking was in there, because I remember I...
You better
the
believe
term
it.
Just before...
Because we dragged every single
and I remember
thing
the, and the press,
up those five places.
The press was like brought up outside.
Yeah, on a hoist through the window. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, so I was part of the, I was the, really the first students, one of the, among the first students that worked in that building.
Yes.
And we had these, you know, great studios and everything.
Yeah, the whole fourth floor was a gigantic painting studio,
yeah.
which was sort of Tony Smith's home, the whole thing, mm-hmm. you know, kind of, you just thought of it as Smith's floor, you know. Nobody else really went up there. And then the printmaking guys, Vinny and I, and a few others were...
Yeah, and Carol Summers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, before I went to... Bennington's term didn't start till March, and of course Hunter's term started, you know, in the beginning of February, so I enrolled and took, you know, about 6 weeks of classes at Hunter before I went up to Bennington, so I'd have something to do.
Yeah.
And I actually took... I had started in the printmaking class with Carol Summers, who was also quite a very interesting guy, and I remember I was pretty weird by then, and I was printing every kind of, you know, I was trying to print paper towel tubes.
I was just,
what kind of objects in the world could I, you know, use to make prints with? And he just let me go at it.
Yeah.
That was probably the only formal printmaking class that I ever had, actually.
Right. Who else was around then in terms of faculty that when you came as a faculty member? So yeah, I mean, you were
Bruce Glaser.
On committees, you were going to meetings, blah blah blah.
Faculty meeting.
So
who
was there?
Well, the year I started was when Sandy started.
Sandy
Swain,
Warfeld. Yeah.
Andy Jansen.
My God.
Bob
Swain.
There's a whole bunch of us.
Doug Olson.
Doug had already been there.
Was
Doug
already there?
Doug and Bob. And Antec, though I think Bob was the first, and then Doug was next, and then Antec a little bit later.
Yeah.
Bob was there since 62 or 63 or something like that. I met
Bob Swain or Bob Hewitt.
Hewitt.
Yes.
I met Hewitt when I was still, you know, either I had just come back from
Bennington,
or was just so I was still a, I think I was a senior when I met
he was
Bob.
Already teaching
yeah
and
then
course,
I think Doug had started maybe had started then too
mm-hmm. Some of these guys had been working for Tony
yeah
building sculptures like
right.
Swain and so forth. Did Bob do that too?
No,
he didn't.
No, Bob had been in the graduate program. I think Doug was. I'm not sure about Antec.
Mark was.
Yeah.
Mark Feldstein.
Well, he was an undergraduate too, wasn't he?
That's right.
And Bob Barry and.
Bob Barry.
Yeah,
I forgot
who's
about
the
Bob.
Guy who was in education?
Oh, Herb Per.
Herb Per. Yeah.
Yeah.
Herb had been a.
Yeah.
So those guys were undergraduates. Herb, I think, is a little was more a little little closer to my age, but Barry and Feldstein had been undergraduates and had survived the sisters and everything.
And
I think Lutz was probably chair when they came into
it. And actually, Mark talked about having Motherwell as his teacher and then Baziotis.
Yeah, I had Baziotis.
Did you?
Really? Yeah, there were funny little one credit courses that you took as a BFA, meaning and painting or something like that. There were these like subject courses and you would take whatever. I was a painting major, so it was something in painting.
And was it him just talking?
Yeah. Him just talking, and then of course I had everybody just as they died. He died, of course, right in the middle of my class. So I don't remember who finished it, but I do remember having a couple of conversations with him. And he was pretty interesting.
What was your feeling about him? Was he? How did it strike you? Did you recall? I never knew him,
mm-hmm.
and
he was. You know, he wasn't anybody I got to know very well.
Yeah.
Because I think he was just part of he was kind of an adjunct or something. I don't think he was a regular.
No, he was. He was full-time.
He was, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess by the time I got to that state, he must have died around 64 or something.
He may have been sick then.
Yeah. Because as I remember, he had to pull out. I don't think he died during the term, but I think he had to leave the class or something like that.
Yeah,
so I'm a little fuzzy on that.
Yeah.
So I had a brief experience with him.
That's interesting. I didn't know about those topic courses. That's very interesting.
I wish I could remember them. They're kind of interesting.
You didn't teach painting or?
No, it was a talk class.
Yeah.
And there was one in each, I can think it was meaning in painting. It wasn't that, but it was something that sounded like that.
Yeah.
I wonder if. I don't know if anybody else would remember. Because Hunter didn't have. Hunter's much more sort of regularized now. Hunter had one credit, two credit, and three credit courses, and you in a term could be taking six or seven classes. It was a zoo. And one, you had to take a class in speech, and, well, I got exempted from hygiene, luckily.
And then, there was a lot of that stuff.
Modes of expression in painting, something like that, maybe. Modes of expression in sculpture, modes of expression in a couple other things.
Wow.
I think that was it.
Yeah.
And I don't exactly remember what he talked about, what happened in that class, but I remember it was kind of like in the late afternoon, or it might have been an evening class or something like that.
In the Park Avenue building, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
16th floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, in one of those art history rooms.
Yeah. Because I came across in the Archives of American Art some, I was going through some microfilm of his papers, and I saw these sheets of paper, and there were buildings, drawings of buildings, and I realized that I had looked at the same buildings, and of course what he was doing was drawing the buildings from the 16th floor, that you could look across the street on Park Avenue. I thought, I know that building. He was sitting here doodling those buildings. It was great.
I have to tell you one of the funniest, both awful and funniest experiences, which happened, I think, when I was a teacher, when I had started to teach, but I was an adjunct, of course, and I was teaching in the Bronx and in the evening, which paid a lot less in those days. And I remember saying something to Gene about it, and he said, well, the men have wives. I'm thinking, yeah, the wives work.
Right. What
What's happening
here?
And I say, look, man, I make $100 a month. I got to do a little better than this.
Yeah.
So I was teaching and also secretary of the graduate department, working with Harry Stinson. Sweet, sweet. Remember, he'd come in and he'd hang up his little coat. He was very small.
The smallest man. Yeah.
So I was his secretary.
Think he was? 5'1"?
I was taller. No, I'm not taller than many people. I was taller than he was. And then Harry retired, and I worked with, I had his name a minute ago, Robert,
Richenberg.
No, Richard, no. Who was he? Was an artist who was there briefly. He made funny things that kind of went up and down in the heat. He was sort of a sculptor, combined media guy.
Oh, you know, what do you mean up and down? You mean Ricky?
No, I can't. Maybe it'll come to me.
What do you mean up and down?
Well, I remember he had this piece in it. He put it on the radiator and it had this little pecker that came up. And then when he took it off the radiator, it was heat activated. Richenberg?
Was it Bob Richenberg?
Yeah, there we go.
Yes,
Bob Richenberg.
He then went to Cornell later.
Yeah, that was
Bob Richenberg.
So I worked with him in the graduate program.
Funny guy.
But anyway, during those times, which it must have been spring of 67, 68, when we had all the student riots.
Yes.
And so,
yeah, you're right.
I remember we were doing graduate interviews, and I was interviewing some students also, and I had to, the students had taken the elevators over, so we couldn't get to the 16th floor, so I remember I was meeting people in street corners and stuff like this. But at one point I was up on the 16th floor, and somebody let loose some tear gas or something, or the police had shot off tear gas or something like that, and we were gassed beyond belief, and I ended up on the roof by Bob Sikora's office, out on the roof.
I remember that roof.
With a terrified janitor and, who was that big, tall, gay guy?
John Rawlings.
John
And I
John and, so, okay, so here are the three of us. Rawlings is saying, I think I'm going to have a heart attack. I think this is going to be it. Oh, no, the janitor
oh
was like,
God,
hyper.
Oh, my God, really?
And Rawlings kept saying to him, shut up. Shut up. And I was thinking, I'm going to fucking jump.
You know, the
it's
classic.
It's going to be better than being with these two
the
guys.
The classic story that I remember of Rawlings was when he was introduced to Harry Stinson, was in the elevator, one being 6'7" or whatever the hell he was, you know,
right.
Stinson being like 5'1". They were introduced by Gene. They looked at each other and they burst out laughing. You know, what else was there to do? You know?
Really? And I was stuck with those guys for a couple of hours up there before the air cleared. And
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
It was a scene. I thought Rawlings was going to throw this poor guy off the roof.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to sort of comfort the two of them. You know, they're there. Two men totally, gone to pieces. Totally
really
gone to
good
pieces.
War material.
Yeah, right. And I thought, just let me out of here. I'll take the tear gas, whatever.
Well, I was thinking as you were talking before that sort of peaceful era was quickly replaced by 67 and 68 by all this rioting where you didn't know whether you were going to go to school or whether there would be classes or you would meet in the street or whatever the hell the idea was going to be.
Yeah.
So it was tumultuous, really. Mm-hmm. And
very tumultuous times.
Yeah.
Plus, I was living down on Chambers Street where the, you know, the roadblocks never went down and there was always there was always somebody demonstrating or rioting. You know, we'd wake up in the morning to, hell no, we won't go, or hell yes, you will go, or something like that.
There was a lot of draft stuff going on.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yes, because for one thing, the draft headquarters were still down on Whitehall Street, and there was always something going on there, you know. So how long?
So I was thinking about Bill Slater.
Oh my God! Of course, Bill. Yeah. I wonder where Bill is these days.
He's out in Washington. We still correspond.
Washington State. Yeah, really.
Yeah, he's up in up outside of Seattle on. You know, on an island or something there, he built his, you know, he got married and had a child, and then his wife was killed in a car accident. I met her in, they were visiting in 77, sweet young woman named Judy. She's, you know, quite a bit younger than he was.
Yeah.
And they just had a new baby, and they were in some drunk or something, smacked him, and she was killed. And
oh, my God.
Bill woke up, you know, like a month later or something, and, you know, to find out that his wife was dead, and the little boy was fine. And so Bill raised his son, and he's probably just about out of college by now, if not a couple of years. I think he was a math major or something. And I never met the boy. And Bill has quite a successful career as a painter. And he shows out of one of the galleries in Washington. He goes to Paris and France and stuff. And he's, you know, he got sent last letter. He said he's, you know, sold out a show and earned $40,000 and so forth.
He was a great guy, a very sweet guy.
Yeah. So he and I were always very very good friends and have maintained
that
friendship.
And he had a friendship with Susan and
yeah, that's
we
right.
saw something of each other when Susan and I were married. Very sweet guy and he taught a class too, I think. There were a number of people who Bob Barry taught a class, I know, Susan taught a class. There was that business of hiring the people who had come out of the program sort of as a continuity, I think.
I think Bill had been one of those people that worked for Tony or something.
Yes,
I think.
That sounds right. Yeah. And then
So that's that was another one of my colleagues that I met there.
Yeah, yeah. And when did you finally leave there? Do you know what
75.
Year that? 75.
I was one of the last, I hung in for a couple of years as they were firing people. I was one of the last to go.
Well, speaking of tumultuous, of course, that was...
Those were the worst of times, I suppose.
Those were the worst of times. 72 was a terrible year when everybody thought the whole city was going to go down the tubes. And then, of course, Gene eventually left. Everything literally changed.
I guess we had Kip for a year or something.
Kip was there for a year.
And he didn't do too well. And Doris.
Doris Kennedy was there.
Doris, was the one that unrehired me.
Oh, really?
She fired me and tried to feed me a sandwich.
How's
she
that?
Said, you're fired here. You want my sandwich? maybe I might need it in a month or so.
Yeah, I was just thinking. Will it pay the rent?
Yeah, right. So.
Yeah, those were, you can't help looking back at that without
feeling.
Yeah,
so glad that's over.
God. Yes,
because
exactly.
I spent 10 years where I did not even make $10,000.
Yeah.
I made enough to survive any luxury that I had. Luckily, I had Bob, or I wouldn't have had any fun at all for those years. I got unemployment for a while. I painted bathrooms. I taught here and there.
Oh, you mean subsequent?
Yeah,
to
that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it was I was already in my 30s.
Yeah,
and,
that was not
so. It was
easy.
It's a difficult period. I'm very grateful to have a job now, and don't ever want to go back to that state again. But luckily, my expenses were low. I'd never really lived off the hog, even when I was working at Hunter, so that I was able to take take the cut from 17 to zero fairly. Easily.
Of
course, my mother had died at the same time and left me a little money, so that,
yeah.
which I invested, and that kind of got me through some of those years. But those were rough times.
Yeah.
And as a painter, I was about as necessary as whatever, buggy whips or something. It was very hard to find a job.
And the art scene was in such flux. The thing had shifted over to a much greater pop mentality, and seriousness was
shoved
to the periphery.
Exactly. Yeah.
It always has left me feeling that what we were brought up on just utterly was transformed.
That was definitely the end of something.
Absolutely. There's no question of it. We lived through a major, coming in on the tail of the abstract expressionist people, then of minimalism, and then this huge revolution.
Right.
I mean,
that it was cheap rents, rent control. It made it possible that you could be an artist and work part-time and do your work and live, maybe not high off the hog, but you could, you had a roof over your head. And if you killed enough cockroaches, your bed would be clean, kind of thing. But after that, I mean, I don't know how people, I don't know what a kid going to New York, how they do it. Our students go to New York, but they live, 17 to an apartment.
Yeah, that's how they do it.
Yeah.
That's how they do it.
And they're in Queens.
That's right. That's life there.
And so there we were
at
the center.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the most telling aspect is what you describe as that seriousness, which wasn't only in the schools, it was in the general art world.
I think it was.
And a respect. Mm-hmm. I mean, it isn't that people were stupid or namby-pamby, because it was tough and it was competitive and so forth and so on. But that seriousness, that was what we all banked on, I think. You know,
Yeah, you weren't just out there hawking your wares or something, which kind of seems to be
the whole marketplace idea was not.
Yeah, it wasn't
part of the
right
deal.
Because you didn't need to be rich to.
That's right.
To do it, so I think that had a lot to. The economy went down the tubes, rent control went down the tubes, and with it, a lot of great stuff.
So, well, thank you, Carol. This was. More than a reminiscence. I mean, it's.
I could go on.
It's well do. but it brings it alive. How you talk about it, and you were incredibly lucky.
I was absolutely, no doubt about it.
Well, thank you.